Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Post podcast. Well, as we all know, the government is going to be busy in the coming weeks preparing Budget 2019. And many of the leaks and kites that have already been flown have been around tax cuts, what people are going to get and much they're going to see added onto their pay packet. What people haven't started talking about yet is spending. And when we always think about spending, we always assume how much we're going to be spending on roads, hospitals, schools or whatever. But Michael Brennan, our political editor, joins me now because we're going to talk about spending efficiencies. Because in the government, and what always happens is, whenever we talk about spending, we never talk about reducing our spending. We never talk about creating efficiencies, about how we can spend that money better in a more targeted way. And Michael, that's something at this point, with budgetary constraints and trying to balance the books and limited room for taxes, for tax cuts, spending efficiencies needs to be more on the agenda.
It does. You might remember it was a big theme during the recession. Look, we need on board.
Get more with less.
It was a constant. Now, you'd be told at senior levels of government, the focus on spending efficiency and public sector reform is just not there because the necessity is not there the way it was. Tax receipts have improved. Budgets have got better. But the argument, I suppose, I'm making here is the need is just as great and the potential for gains for the government and society as large is just as great.
But is it a mindset thing? I mean, you know, we always have this thing. People, and we hear this anecdotally and we see evidence of it on occasion, that when a government department or a state agency is getting near the end of the year and they haven't spent all their money, they spend it pretty quickly or they announce the allocation for it. Nobody wants to see their budgets cut.
And I think that's very true. And I think there's also the thing that change is hard. You know, the example we're going to talk about, the Green Schools Travel Programme. When you asked somebody, is a programme working well? And if it isn't, what do you do about it? That requires work by public servants. And it's easier to say, well, that programme is great. It's delivering. And leave me alone.
So yeah, I think that's another factor. I'll come to that in a second. Because, you know, there is that thing. I mean, we are great in this country at setting up initiatives, at setting up state agencies. And I suppose it was the point Colin McCarthy made when he did that report on board SNPnua, where he looked at it and says, actually, a number of them have served their useful purpose. It's not that they've failed. They've done what they needed to do, but we just don't need them anymore.
Yeah.
But in Ireland, we never shut them down.
No, because politically, it's a lot easier to set something up than shut something down. And you'll have, naturally, people who are employed there will say it's terrible, we're doing a great job, and the opposition may latch onto it. But sometimes that's the reality, that you need to do something, then it works, then you move the money on to something else.
And you shut it down. And the example you gave was the Green Schools programme. It employs 32 people. The idea is getting children to school in a cheaper, but also more environmentally friendly way. I suppose we want to ask a question and focus on this example, but is it working? Michael, do you want to tell us what it is and what it was supposed to do and where it sits now?
Absolutely. The Green Schools Travel Programme has been going for quite a while now. And on the face of it, it's an excellent idea, as you said, is to get more children going to school like they did in the old days by walking or cycling instead of in the car. The only problem for the programme is there was a thing called a focus policy assessment done a couple of years ago, and it raised major questions about it. It was supposed to help reduce car travel by 15% in terms of primary pupils going to school. What actually happened between two census periods, 2006 and 2011, is the number of people in cars or percentage of them went up by 6%. It's stayed constant really since then. About 60% of primary school children go to their school by car. So there are a lot of questions. Was this programme working? Was it delivering? And the economists in government seem to think it wasn't. And that's I suppose, why we're focusing
on
it.
That's what we're focusing. But I mean, we have a clip here from Jane Hackett. She's the manager of the Green Schools Travel Programme. And she outlines what could actually be achieved.
Currently, we're in a social norm where about 60% of children are driven to school every day. So when you're talking about cutting our carbon emissions in Ireland, the 20% of cars on a road every morning are actually bringing kids to school. So we want to be actively engaged in changing that. And the new social norm is what I want to see is kids walking and cycling. And that was the social norm that was accepted in the 1980s and the 1990s when we had 70% of children go to school on their own.
Yeah, you just heard Jane there in one of the clips they have of the program on YouTube. Like, that is potentially a huge benefit for people, that you could have 20% of the cars taken off the roads every morning. Can you imagine the economic productivity that would generate? Can you imagine then the health benefits if you can get tens of thousands of extra children walking and cycling every day?
It's that holistic thing. It's not just an immediate bottom line onto one government department. It's a societal and an economic benefit, because the health budget, it eats into the health budget, into environment, into all those issues. Yeah. It's a more holistic approach.
It is. And I suppose the promises to change this programme after that rather critical assessment back in 2015, the Department of Transport and Tourism went ahead and reviewed it. Now, we're still waiting to see that review published, but they have told us that they are putting in new targets. They've done an independent survey to see, does it match up and deliver benefit in the schools where it's delivered? And also, there's going to be a sunset clause perhaps put in the new programme, that if it doesn't deliver definitively the next time out, which is the next 3 years, they will think about ending it. So, in fairness, action seems to be taken. Let's hope it produces results.
Yeah. And it's 1.6 million. I know it's not a massive sum of money, but it's a pretty hefty sum of money all the same.
It still is. And for example, if you're to find the next time when they review it that still they aren't convinced by the results, 1.6 million would build you a lot of cycle lanes, you know, which might be a better way of using the money. But let's wait and see.
That's one example, Michael, of how we can create these efficiencies. I mean, there are others.
There are. I think, you know, there's some long running ones which are astonishing that it's taking so long for them to actually be put in effect. A bugbear, people, is criminal legal aid, where you have about 60 million spent each year on free legal aid for people who are before the criminal courts. At the moment, we have no proper system of means testing for people who are applying. It's up to the judge. They, you know, sort of hand it out. And numerous reports have said bring in a system of proper means testing, and even contributions by people who are found to have assets acquired dubiously that they could contribute. And that drives the public mad. So that is something the government could do. And perhaps as well, we might talk about the notion of the fuel allowance, which is another one I think, you know, could be looked at.
Yeah, well, that's a big thing, you know, because on one hand, we're giving out free fuel. And on the other hand, our stated goal is to make the country more environmentally friendly.
Yeah.
You know, we could surely look at doing things like how can we make homes more environmentally and energy efficient?
Well, I'd say one method, and this was looked at by the Department of Communications during the recession, but I think they blinked because they realised it would be very politically difficult to do. We give out about maybe 200 million every year in the fuel allowance to people who are in fuel poverty, and that's certainly vital for them to keep their homes heated in winter. But once you get your home retrofitted by the state, there is a grant scheme for for people in fuel poverty to get their home upgraded. That is a great idea. But then they keep getting the fuel allowance as well. So they're in a home that is warmer, that has been upgraded, and yet the government keeps giving the fuel allowance. Now, why not take the fuel allowance, or at least some of it, from those householders and use it to fund upgrade of properties for other people in low incomes, and even people in medium incomes? To me, that would make an awful lot of sense. You would save towards your climate change targets because you're reducing the spend on home and heating oil and gas. But it's a politically difficult one, so for the moment they keep spending on the fuel allowance.
You've mentioned one before, and I suppose we always think about, we keep on getting told when we're at home, turn off the lights when you're not in the room. I mean, you could make a similar point about motorways.
Yeah, there's actually some positive news to report here, and credit, I suppose, to Transport Infrastructure Ireland, who run the country's motorway network. They looked at 4 motorway junctions last year. They, as a pilot scheme, they reduced the lights, turned down the lights effectively. You and I have both driven, I'm sure, motorways late at night where you see them emblazoned with light and you're the only car on the road, you know,
for miles either way.
Yeah, you go to countries like Britain, that doesn't happen. They tend to turn off the lights except at junctions. So that has worked, it seems, in the pilot, and they're going to roll out another 40 junctions this year. So less lights, less money spent,
and I know the sort of things that we've mentioned about lights, about energy grants, we talked about the schools travel program, free legal aid. Individually, they're all small things, Michael. But the point is, if we can build them all together, you do then get the leeway to invest, to build that extra school, to work on the health service or whatever else, but you're spending money in a better way when the sum of it all adds up.
Yeah, absolutely. And like the some, it's amazing, in fairness to government departments, maybe some of the reason why they don't always put huge effort in where they should is sometimes they don't get the credit where they should, because obviously headlines about failures and excesses tend to make more headlines. But there's a recent example with the Intreo offices, the Department of Social Protection, built all over the country. A lot of those were just done on state land or state agencies. They're actually delivered for a fairly low cost when they could have just gone out and rented and bought them all from the private sector. So that was a very successful retrofitting, you know, yeah, new office opening, you know, for 60 locations around the country. So that saves money that you can invest in some other social programme. So definitely, as you say, there's great benefits if you put in the effort.
Okay, well, Michael, thanks very much for joining me here today. I mean, it is, as I said, it's an interesting issue. It's one that's not discussed in this country because we always discuss tax cuts, spending hikes. We never look at what we can do with the money that we spend. So thank you very much.